Where to begin? Do we begin with the loss of Alabama? Do we begin with Georgia's domination? Or do we begin with the Red River Shootout, which was an awesome football game? Where do we start, guys?
I think we should start with introducing our guest host today. The new little one in Matt's arms over there.
Yeah, guest host Maddox is with us today. He came into this world, and his sister, who is almost 2 years old, had never seen Alabama lose, and he's never seen Alabama win. So, I mean, this is just a very strange week. But he's been awesome. He's doing great. He's so freaking small. It's bizarre, but doing really good. Mom's doing good. So it's good to be back on this week. Missed being on with you guys last week. And now I'm just glad I get to spew some opinion out here today, because I've got a lot of them.
Oh, Matt, I'm sure you do. I've already mentally prepared myself for your long elaborations of why Alabama lost. So, you know, how about we start there, Matt? We're going to give you all the time you need to vent. Do what you have to do. I know it was a long weekend, but just go ahead and get it off your chest there, Matt.
Look, man, you know, it sucked. And anytime Alabama loses, it sucks. It's one of those things, like, you know, everybody's cheering for you to lose that's not an Alabama fan. So when you lose, it makes it a little bit harder whenever you do. But I don't even know where to begin. I mean, honestly, in the second half, it was a completely different team that showed up. I think they came out a lot more motivated in the second half. I'm sure that there was some souls that were eaten by Nick Saban in the locker room at halftime. You could tell Nick Saban was fired up because of how flustered he was right there at the halftime interview whenever they stopped to talk to him. And they're asking him about timeouts and stuff like that. I mean, look, O-line got abused. They got bullied. Bryce Young played well. I think that there were some plays that there's some throws that he missed in key situations that he probably shouldn't have been in anyways. Bill O'Brien has been getting hammered on Twitter for being a terrible offensive coordinator. Now, here's where I stand on this. And I went back and I watched the game again, relive the misery, but I wanted to watch it from a standpoint of, now I know what happens. Let's see where I can find things. And I understand where people are coming from with Bill O'Brien. I don't think that it was a completely his fault, but if you watched it, Alabama would move right down the field running the ball. They'd get inside the 10, and then they would be like, oh, pass, pass, pass. Now, again, it wasn't always play calling, because Cameron Latu dropped a touchdown pass. John Metchie dropped a pass in the red zone that would put us in a good position. So I think that Bill O'Brien's taking some heat that he shouldn't necessarily be taking complete heat for. Like, some guys got to step up and make a play at some point. There was a half of football that happened. The defense was non-existent. If you score 38 points in a game, you should win. You should win, especially if you're Alabama. You score 38 points, you should win. So I'm not necessarily that mad at Bill O'Brien, but the physicality of Alabama was off. Alabama has looked kind of off in that game and in the Florida game. And look, that's my soapbox. I mean, there's so many little things I can nitpick, but those are the big ones. Offensive line got bullied, dropping passes that should have been caught. It looked like Brian Robinson and Jameson Williams were the only two guys that showed up to play in that game.
Yeah, man, that actually wasn't as bad as I expected it to be, Matt, your analysis. But you know what? I think that was a good loss for Alabama. One of the guys who goes to my gym, he's a big Alabama fan. We always talk football every now and then, and he's like, you know, I really want us to lose a game. Just because you don't want to go into the later parts of the season, even the playoff, undefeated, because then you have that mindset of, oh, man, we're perfect. We don't need to fix anything. I think losing to Texas A&M is going to help Alabama figure out what they need to fix offensively and defensively, and that way they can be better prepared for the playoff. I think Alabama's going to be just fine. Now they're in a tricky spot, because if they, you know, win out in the SEC West and play Georgia in the SEC championship game, they have to win that game. Like, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Because if they lose that game to Georgia, they will not be in the playoff. That's just a fact. So Alabama really needs to fix what they didn't do well on Saturday. I think they will. I think Nick Saban's a good enough coach to get his staff together, get the team ready, and Alabama's going to be just fine.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at all of Nick Saban's national championships, more often than not, his team is not undefeated when they win at the end. They usually lose a game they shouldn't lose.
There's only been two that we've been undefeated, and that was 2009 against Texas and last year. Outside of that, there's been at least one. There's been a loss.
2015 with Derrick Henry, right? Or no, y'all lost to Ole Miss that year.
Yeah, we lost to Ole Miss. So every year, except for those two, there's been a loss.
That's right. Yeah, 2019 and last year. So like every single year, they lose to a team and they don't show up in a game where they should blow out the other team. And I honestly think there's a good chance this could be one of those years. I think the only difference between this year and those other national championship teams is this team is super young. This team has probably lost more starters, more first-round NFL talent starters than any team in history. The last 2 years, Alabama has had countless numbers of players, especially in some of the top positions like wide receiver, quarterback, running back, go to the NFL draft and go first round and are starting for NFL teams. So I think that is hurting Alabama right now, but I do think Nick Saban is a good enough coach to where once he gets to the SEC championship, once he gets to the playoff, if he gets to that point and he gets that young talent. I mean, last year they had I think it was the top rated recruiting class of all time. He's got talented freshmen. He's got good players. If he gets those guys in there and gets them all going with Bryce Young, they're going to be really scary at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not. There's a lot of people that are hitting the panic button and the it's over button for Alabama right now. Quite frankly, we didn't look very good finishing against Florida. For whatever reason, we have not been able to put a complete game together. I mean, even in the wins like against Ole Miss, we didn't finish in the second half. Ole Miss outscored us in the second half. So when you put those things into perspective, it's like, you know, look, Alabama is going to be fine. Nick Saban is going to coach this team up. And I think now he officially has their attention because you have had guys that have come out and said, look, we didn't practice with the same intensity that we should have been practicing with all week. And Will Anderson, who is a big, big leader on that defense, and he's only a sophomore, he comes out and he's like, yeah, guys were not taking things as seriously as they should have. And I think Alabama has finally hit a point where the rat poison has kind of gotten into their heads a little bit, where now, for the first time ever, we're seeing an Alabama team who's been told forever that they're great and they've never experienced losing, and then now they finally hit it, and now they've got to respond. And for the most part, I think that we will. We're a much different and better team at home. I think this week will be a very telling game against Mississippi State because it's on the road in Starkville. That's a place that we've struggled before. 2017 with Jalen Hurts, we went in there, and that was kind of one of those weird games where Dan Mullen had like the perfect play-calling game, very similar to Florida this year, where he just called everything perfectly and kept the ball on their side. But Jalen Hurts had a two-minute drive that won that game with a touchdown pass to Devontae Smith. So if the trend continues, Alabama may struggle a little bit in this game, finishing late in the game, but we shouldn't, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened.
Yeah, I think the worst part about this Alabama loss isn't even that the fact that they lost, and I'm not talking about you, Matt, I'm talking about all the other people, the Alabama fans who aren't used to losing. You guys are annoying! Like, okay, you lost. Like, people are going to talk crap to you because you're Alabama. You should take it as a compliment. We don't need these long synopsises on social media. We don't need, you know, all this other things. We don't need you to tell people that Let me stop. I'm going to stop it there. But we you lost. Get over it. It's football. People talk crap. It's going to happen. You guys are going to be fine. Get over it. It's football.
I'll say this too. The Alabama fans that get the most crap thrown at them are the ones who talk the most crap throughout the year.
Yep.
I typically follow the general rule of I really hate whenever people throw things in my face like Alabama losses. So I don't go into games, and Witt can attest to this because we've played Georgia since this podcast has been going on, I am not a guy who goes into a game like, oh, man, we're going to beat the snot out of you and throw all these different troll jobs at you. After the game, I might throw, like, one little slide remark in there like, oh, yeah, how did that feel? But at the same time, like, I know what it's like to be on the receiving end of those comments. And when you talk a lot of smack, you better expect it back, especially when you lose, because it is so few times in the past 13 years, I guess, that Alabama's lost, that people will jump on that, and that you're going to get it, and be proud that that's the position that you're in right now, Alabama fans, because it wasn't always like this. No one used to care when we lost, because it was like, oh yeah, Alabama lost, they're 7-5 this year, and they lost at home to Louisiana Monroe.
Be proud people are talking crap to you, because that just shows how great your team is. We don't need to hear about it on social media. Like, just relax.
See, one thing I think is crazy is every time Alabama loses, the entire world falls apart. Like, I feel like Alabama fans and Alabama haters, both of them, it's just like everything is gone. Like, all the haters are like, oh, Nick Saban's done. The dynasty's over. Jimbo Fisher took him out. He broke the streak. And then Alabama fans are like, Bill O'Brien sucks. Pete Golding sucks. Nick Saban's washed. Da-da-da-da-da. Bryce Young, he's terrible. Defense is awful. It's like, look, Alabama got outplayed in that game. But I think if Alabama played that game against Texas A&M 9 times out of 10, they would win that game. Texas A&M is a good football team. They're very talented. They haven't played great this year, but I think a lot of that has to do with Zach Calzada not having a lot of experience coming into when he took over that job. And he played great. But like I said, Alabama is a way better football team than Texas A&M. Texas A&M had black magic on their side. I've said this a bunch of times before. Alabama was a victim to black magic. It's something that happens in college football and sports where sometimes it's just unexplainable. Things just happen. Alabama will drop wide open passes in the end zone. Alabama will get out-muscled at the offensive line. It's just something that happens from time to time. It's not something that is going to happen often, but it's very interesting to see when it does.
And if you notice, every time Alabama loses, there's always like 3 plays that you can point to that was the difference in the game. And going back to that 2015 team and that loss to Ole Miss, I went back and like watched that game again. Just because I was curious, because I was in college at the time, and it was a Saturday, and it was a night game, so there are moments of that game that are a little foggy to me. So I went back and watched it because I wanted to see, like, how was it? And that game wasn't even close. Like, Ole Miss outmanned us in every phase of the game, and we were never really able to get it back. The Texas A&M game, the interception by Bryce Young in the end zone while we were on the 2-yard line, that was a huge swing of momentum. Fumbled the ball in our own territory, gave Texas A&M a short field. You take just those 2 plays and you change that around, and that can be a different outcome. Then you couple that with Cam Latu dropping a ball in the end zone, and then Alabama settling for a field goal that takes 4 points off the board in critical situations. I hate the position that those plays put us in, but you know, it is what it is. You know, look, we lost. On we go, and I've said enough about Alabama. I'm done talking about it, because the more exciting games to watch this week started at noon with Caleb Williams coming in and resurging a dead Oklahoma team and bringing them to life in the Red River Shootout.
Man, when I tell you, my day was going awesome until noon. My brisket came out perfect. It was really good. I had a couple beers. I sit down, kickoff, you know, happens, and then first play of the game, a screen pass goes like 75 yards for a touchdown. Chris Fowler's going wild, you know, and I'm just like, what is happening? We just got absolutely blitzed in that first quarter. 28, it was like 28-7 or something like that. The team came out flat, and we just needed a spark. There was a block punt within the first minute. Oklahoma was down 21 points, and it was just an absolutely horrible start to my Saturday until Caleb Williams came in and saved the day. And I'm not going to lie, this is probably one of the best Oklahoma games, one of the best Oklahoma-Texas games I've ever seen in my entire life. The game was absolutely awesome from start to finish, and I experienced so many different emotions during that game, from sadness to hatred, for Spencer Rattler to pure overjoyed happiness to just I can't describe it. It was really awesome, and you know, I'm really happy Lincoln Riley decided to make that switch to Caleb Williams. And you could see immediately when it was fourth and one, if I'm not mistaken, on about the 40-ish yard line, Caleb Williams comes in for just a little quarterback run, and the dude breaks off a touchdown run for like 60 yards, and the team immediately responded to that. And the next two drives, he put Spencer Rattler back out there, and it was just flat again. So I'm happy that he finally saw the light and decided to put Caleb Williams in there, because the offense was just so much better. Like, you could see the offense flow, passes were open. You know, he was able to make tight windows with his throws. He was able to run. Our offensive line has not been great this year, but because of his use of his legs, he's able to actually kind of patch up that patchy offensive line. So I'm really happy that Caleb Williams came in. Good win for Oklahoma. Horns down. I hate Texas. I really wish I would have been there in person, because watching it on TV, that atmosphere just looked like it was nuts. Like, where every time Oklahoma scored, the stadium would just start rocking, and it was like, ah, oh, man, this just looks really awesome.
Yeah, Lando, I actually agree with you. I think that's the best Oklahoma-Texas game I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of good ones. Like I've said a couple times on the show, I think Oklahoma-Texas is, if not the best rivalry, top two or three. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't think I've seen a game like that from another rivalry, besides maybe like the Iron Bowl or Army-Navy, which is always good. But in this game, we've been saying since the beginning of the season, pretty much all of us, that Spencer Rattler was holding back the really talented skill players they had on offense.
Marvin
Mims and Kennedy Brooks are two of the best players in the entire country, and they haven't done squat this entire season. They come into this game, Caleb Williams gets put in the game. Kennedy Brooks goes for 217 yards and two touchdowns. Marvin Mims, 136 yards and two touchdowns. Unbelievable. Like, the way the offense responded when Caleb Williams came into the game was night and day from what we've seen from Oklahoma's offense this season.
Yeah, wait, and I want to point something out, because you actually said something that actually brought something to my attention. Marvin Mims, who is Oklahoma's number one wide receiver, through five games, had zero catches for touchdowns. That all came to an end on Saturday when Caleb Williams threw him the ball in the end zone, and he had two touchdowns because Caleb Williams was in at quarterback. That just goes to show that Spencer Rattler wasn't doing anything for this offense. And I'll say another thing, Eric Gray, the transfer from Tennessee, the running back, he is an electric football player. And when Rattler's in the game, it's like he's non-existent. When Caleb Williams came in the game, he was breaking runs all over the place. He was a key addition to our offense. So there's a question later on that in our mailbag that asks a question about Rattler and Caleb Williams. We're going to answer that question. I think we all know who should be starting for Oklahoma next week.
That offense was like completely different. Like there weren't even the same team with Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams in there. I mean, with Rattler, they moved the ball here and there, but like with Caleb, when Caleb Williams was on the field, it was like Oklahoma had a resurgence of the years of Kyler Murray, and where it was like, all right, I can, anytime that we touch the ball, we're going to score. And if you stop us once, good luck. You're going to have to score, and you're going to have to outscore us, because we're going to score every time we touch the ball. And it was insane. I could not imagine what that game would have looked like had he started it. And I think that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago whenever we were talking about like playoff teams and stuff like that. And we all agreed that Oklahoma has not hit their stride yet, and that they were still the scariest team because they were so talented, yet they'd underperformed in every single game. Caleb Williams, and we've even talked about this, will he put Caleb Williams in over Spencer Rattler? I think he knew that he had to do it in that moment, because if you lose to Texas and it's a beatdown, and Texas has already lost to Arkansas, that's just going to make it a really hard uphill battle, even for a one-loss Oklahoma, if they win the Big 12 championship to get in a playoff. So I think Lincoln Riley knew he had to make the move, and when he made the move, he's not going to regret it now, because I don't see a team in the Big 12 that's going to compete with Oklahoma now the rest of the way.
Well, I saw today that Lincoln Riley still doesn't know who he's going to start. Do you know why? Like, what is he seeing in Spencer Rattler, or what is he seeing and thinking about as to why he wouldn't start Caleb Williams?
I have your answer.
That's all coach speak, man.
Yeah.
That's all coach speak.
Exactly.
In my opinion.
Oklahoma is notorious for not – so when Oklahoma has injuries on their team, Lincoln Riley doesn't disclose any type of injuries. He doesn't disclose anything about the team. So when he's saying he doesn't know who's going to start for Saturday, he knows exactly who's going to start for Saturday. He's just
that's
the options open.
All the best coaches do that, though, because if you tell the media who's going to be your starter – or tell the media who's, you know, who's hurt and blah, 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 then the other team knows who they have to prepare for. If the other team doesn't know, if they think Spencer Rattler might start, Caleb Williams might start, and then you start the other one, you have a completely different skill set from each different quarterback. They have no idea what they need to prepare for. So it really throws a wrench into their practice plans for them to come out and say, well, Spencer Rattler might start, Caleb Williams might start. But honestly, I would not be totally surprised if Lincoln Riley started Spencer Rattler. I would not agree with it. I wouldn't do it, but I don't know what it is what about Spencer Rattler. But he's been sticking to him a little bit more than I would have.
Yeah, Whit, you kind of have the same mindset of all the analysts on like on ESPN or Fox and stuff like that. They don't think that he should start Caleb Williams. He thinks he should still go with Rattler. I think they think that because of experience. He's already played a season, you know, he kind of knows the offense. If you ask me, I don't give a damn. I'm riding with the guy that the team responds to, that the offense clicks with, and that quite frankly the team I'm just gonna say it. Oklahoma's, especially with the way the defense is playing, the defense only allowed 10 points in that second half, and I'm gonna say I think that's solely because the offense got going, and you know, the defense didn't have to go on the field thinking like, man, the offense isn't doing anything, we're gonna be out here all day. Because the offense was rolling, the defense had, you know, was able to pin their ears back and go play physical football. I think Oklahoma's one of the best teams in the country. You can quote me on it too.
Oh, no doubt. I agree with you there. To me, the whole purpose of Lincoln Riley saying we don't know yet, or I haven't decided yet, is it's all coach speak. He knows good and well who he's gonna start in the game, but when you announce it, not only do you have this situation like Whit was talking about where the team doesn't know who they're going to prepare for, it also builds so many more storylines around your school that you just don't want that negativity. And when you're dealing with kids that are 18 to 21 years old, 22 years old, even though they can try and keep them as disconnected from social media as they want, if Lincoln Riley comes out and says, yeah, Caleb Williams is my starter, every reporter in every major news market ever is going to be on that story talking about it. And he doesn't want to kill Spencer Rattler's hopes and dreams completely, I'm sure, because if Caleb Williams gets hurt, guess who's going to be back in the game? Spencer Rattler. And you've got to have a guy with a good mindset there. So he's probably handling all that behind closed doors, and it's a lot different of a situation than – you know, it's very similar to like when Tua and Jalen were going back and forth, and everyone in the world knew Tua Tagovailoa was going to start for Alabama. But Nick Saban was like, I'm not going to tell you who I'm going to start every week. It's just not happening. These are kids. Quit asking. And ultimately, that's what this is what it's going to be.
But I feel like every Nick Saban press conference ends in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
Last thing I'll say about this game is, I'm going to tell you how much I hate Texas. When they jumped out to that big lead in the first quarter, I was literally sitting there in my chair thinking, man, I'm going to have to go a whole year knowing that we lost to Texas. And I was just sitting there, and the more I thought about it, the more angry I got, and the more sad I got. And I'm just like, oh, God, this is just horrible. I'm not going to be able to live with myself. And then when we came back, it made my entire day. I started drinking more beers, and I was like, God, it's a noon game. I'm not going to be able to make it through the rest of these games. I ended up falling asleep at like 10:30 and didn't even get to see Alabama lose. So, you know, kudos to Oklahoma and Texas for, once again, for I think this is the fifth straight year that this game has been decided by one possession or less. Thank you for putting on such a great show, because I look forward to this game every year. And no matter which team is good, which team is ranked, the game is always really good. So Boomer Sooner horns down.
Yeah, that was and the greatest part about this weekend slate was that wasn't the only great noon game. The Ole Miss-Arkansas game was equally as thrilling as the Texas game. It just obviously didn't have the same following, because everyone in that doesn't have a dog in either of those fights, they're going to watch the Red River Shootout no matter what, rather than Ole Miss Arkansas. But that was a top 20 matchup, 13 Arkansas, 17 Ole Miss, and that one was a shootout too, very similar to the Ole Miss or the Oklahoma Texas game. Just the difference was there wasn't anybody that really fell behind by 21 and then had to work their way back up. It was just a shootout the whole way. And the West, I'll say this, Arkansas is a much better team than I thought they were as a whole. They're for real, and KJ Jefferson deserves a lot more hype behind him as a player than he's gotten ever, because he is like, he is 2021 Cam Newton. Like, the way that he runs with physicality, the arm talent that he has, he can throw a good deep ball. The intermediate passes, or the accuracy isn't great. He's very similar to a Cam Newton, in my opinion.
No, yeah, I could definitely see that. I knew Arkansas was going to be okay. They just ran into a really good Georgia team. Arkansas is they remind me a lot of like the Cleveland Browns. They play what I like to call playoff football, and that's tough, hard-nosed, punch-you-in-the-mouth type football. And I think that's going to go a long way when you start to get deep in the season, when teams are kind of battling with injuries, you know, players are kind of worn out. And I think that, you know, once they – how many losses do they have? They have two losses?
Now they have two.
Now they have two losses. So they're still going to get a pretty decent bowl. Do they still have a possibility of making like a New Year's Six bowl, or is that pretty much out the window?
Probably not, just because depending on what happens in the SEC championship, now there's not going to be two undefeated. So whoever loses the SEC championship is probably going to get that bid for the Sugar Bowl. And then with Ole Miss beating Arkansas, if they went out, that they would get
if we're talking hypotheticals, Alabama and Arkansas have not played yet. Arkansas has two losses. And
yeah,
Alabama
so that'd
has
be
one loss.
That'd be the
Arkansas
third loss.
Could technically beat Alabama and go to the SEC championship and win or lose and make a New Year's Six game.
But that would also require Ole Miss to lose again or lose twice, because they would hold the tiebreaker over Arkansas.
Oh, you're right.
If we're talking both teams went out, no. But I would think Ole Miss has a better chance of making a New Year's Six game than Arkansas does. But both these teams looked really good. This was one of the highest scoring SEC games that I have ever sat through. And I don't think that, I mean, there was no defense at all. I mean, Arkansas's defense is solid. I think the reason they look so bad was because Ole Miss's offense is so good. But Ole Miss has a ghost for a defense. I know we kind of talked about at the beginning of the season, Matt, you know, kind of talked about it. They looked like they were going to be a little bit better than last year. I actually do think they're still better than last year. But the fact that they gave up 51 points this week, they gave up, 42 last week. Once you're starting to see them play these SEC teams, they look like they've come back down to earth, even though they got the win. And good for Ole Miss, good for Lane Kiffin. I think they're a recruiting or two classes away and one good defensive coordinator away from having a really good team that could compete with Alabama.
And that's been my thing is this year, DJ Durkin is not the guy. So looking more into the Ole Miss defensive situation, they're running a 3-2-6 this year, which they adopted from Iowa State. And I think a lot of their problems are more so personnel in some ways than scheme. Arkansas, the reason that later in that game Arkansas was doing so well at moving the ball was they don't have any depth. So there was a lot of guys that played 95 snaps on defense, and that's entirely too many snaps to be out there and be effective. And thus, mistakes were being made. But they're also not blitzing off of it. So, like, if you look at what Texas A&M was effective at with Alabama, was they were bringing pressure from the left side all night long. And it was, like, a constant blitz from the left side. And it was like, all right, pick it up. Or if you don't, Bryce Young's going to be running for his life. Ole Miss doesn't do that to anybody. They didn't do that to Alabama. They didn't bring any pressure against Arkansas until the two-point conversion. And there's people blowing assignments left and right. So I think there's a little bit of scheme issue, but it definitely, to me, is a DJ Durkin problem. Like, they don't tackle well. They aren't very physical. So you're right with they're a recruiting class or two away before that defense is legit enough to where, coupled with a Lane Kiffin offense, they could be a real, real problem in the SEC. I think that they'll compete with 90% of teams in the SEC. The only two that I think that are, would blow them out of the water are Georgia and Alabama, and that's because they have big running backs like and Ole Miss can't handle the run very well.
Well, Georgia once again looked like the number one team in the country. That's because they are the number one team in the country. Georgia's legit. They're really good. Defensively, they're really good. Offensively, they are steady. I know Witt is on pins and needles because, you know, people are still talking about the mailman being the starting quarterback for UGA once JT Daniels gets healthy. But I think that, you know, Stetson Bennett is doing a really good job of holding that ship real nice and steady. And Georgia's offense is good. I think there is going to be a competition once JT Daniels comes back.
I still don't. I'll say this, though. I know during the game, there's a couple like really small, dumb moments where I would be like, Stetson should be the starter. Stetson shouldn't be the quarterback right now. He should be the third string. But, I mean, sitting there watching that game, watching the replay of the game, too, I actually think Georgia can win a national championship with Stetson Bennett this year. And I don't even think it's because Stetson's really improved from last year. I think it's because our receivers are so much better than last year. I mean, we didn't even have our starting four receivers in that game against Auburn. Ladd McConkey is like a bottom of the depth chart receiver, and he went for over 150 yards against Auburn and went off. Dude's an absolute stud. Now, the rest of the year, he's going to be a starter. I have no doubt about it. He's a good player. I think he's going to be starting in our slot for the rest of the year. But Stetson Bennett played really well. He made the passes he needed to make. There was even a couple, like that throw to Ladd McConkey. I was just like, who in the world is this dude? I mean, he made some really good throws. I still think it's JT Daniels' job when he comes back, which I actually think is going to end up being this week. Kirby said in his press conference on Monday that JT looked like he was about to be back, and he's improving really well, including the receivers, too. They're also improving. But I am much more comfortable with knowing that Stetson Bennett is the backup and can play well if JT Daniels does remain hurt for the rest of the season.
Wait, you want to know why I think Stetson Bennett should be the starter for the rest of the season?
Because he can run the ball.
Wrong. How many games has JT Daniels played for UGA this year?
Three. Four. Three. He played in three.
He played in three games. The Clemson game.
Clemson game, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt.
And then Stetson's played in the last three, right?
Stetson played in UAB, Arkansas, and Auburn.
The reason I don't put JT back in is because chemistry. I think he has better chemistry right now. I think the offense looks really good right now with Stetson at the helm. If you bring JT back in, then you're going to have to get all that chemistry right back, you know, have to do it all over again. And it's going to take time for him to gel with those receivers in a game situation. I think Stetson has been in these big games, Arkansas, Auburn, you know, that really matter with when you need to make these big plays. Like, these teams are not scrubs. Now, Georgia handled them, and a lot of that is because the defense is really good. But you still have to go out and make those plays on offense, so that way your defense isn't out on the field the entire time. I think Stetson Bennett should be the starter for the rest of the season just because of chemistry.
I'm not going to say he should be the starter for the rest of the season, but I would definitely say that he should be the starter for right now. Until JT is 100%, and Stetson gives you a reason to put JT in, you got to keep rolling with what's working for you. Because in my opinion, Stetson Bennett, I think he has progressed and improved as a quarterback from last year. There was a couple of throws that he made against Auburn the other day that I don't think he would have made last year. Aside from, I don't remember what game it was that he made, it might have been the South Carolina game where he threw a terrible pick in the end zone or in the red zone. Overall, he's done a very good job of protecting the ball. He hasn't made those boneheaded mistakes like he did last year against Florida. And I really do think that Georgia could win a national championship with Stetson Bennett. I think that there's going to be two different offenses. There's going to be the Stetson Bennett offense, which you're going to put the collar and the leash on Stetson a little bit more. You're not going to open it up, but the run game is going to be a lot more effective, and he can throw the ball when he needs to, versus with JT, you're going to have to pass the ball in order to open the run. Because more teams are going to be putting pressure on him. He's not going to be as mobile as Stetson. So it's going to be two different offensive plans either way that you go. And I just feel like what's working right now for Georgia is running the football and then passing off of the run. And they're going to have to do the opposite with JT. And look, I said this a couple of weeks ago whenever Pecorny Aaron asked us who Georgia was. What they're the most complete team in the country, and when you see the athletes and they have on defense, especially that front seven, Jordan Davis is the best defensive player in the country right now. I think him and Will Anderson are 1A and 1B. They're so good on defense, so fast, and when you have that guy that teams have to worry about on the front of your defense, you're going to win a lot of games regardless of who plays quarterback for you, and because teams still got to score. And that's where you saw Auburn struggle. Now, Auburn, had they had any sort of passing offense whatsoever, they probably – or receivers to catch the ball, that game could have been a little bit closer. But I don't think that Georgia's got anything to worry about as far as the rest of the schedule. I think Tennessee's a good team, but they're not Georgia-level good. Kentucky is kind of in that level of – you know, good enough to beat bad teams, but not good enough to compete with elite teams. So I think Georgia's going to roll the rest of the way. Wouldn't worry about it at all, regardless of who the starting quarterback is.
Whit, when does Georgia play Tennessee?
November 13th, I believe, is when they play Tennessee in Neyland Stadium.
I'm going to say this, and people are probably going to think I'm crazy. That is going to be Georgia's biggest test of the year. Simply because Tennessee is horrible. Okay, let's just put that out there. Tennessee is not what Georgia is. And that is a game that if you don't practice well in throughout the week and you're like, oh, they're just Tennessee, da-da-da-da-da-da, we're just going to go out there and just whatever. We're Georgia. Tennessee's been scoring some points as of late. So if you don't practice well, they're still an SEC team, all right? They still have SEC-type players on their football team. So you got to go out there, do what you have to do, blow them out by 100, and then don't worry about it. But you can't. You have to listen. Now, people are going to think I'm crazy, but don't slip up.
No, Lato, I'm actually right there with you. I don't think that's our toughest test of the season, but I was actually watching their game this weekend against Missouri, and I was just thinking, Josh Heupel's offense, what he does in the passing game is exactly what you need to do to beat Georgia's defense. The way that they throw the ball, the way they scheme receivers open, the way they run the ball behind the passing game like they do, Georgia does not play another team this season that does that. Even if they play Alabama, Alabama throws the ball a lot, and Alabama can be explosive in the passing game, but Alabama is better when they run the football first this season with Brian Robinson and that offensive line. Tennessee is a very, very good passing team. They've gotten better over this year. They started off really not good. I'm not saying they're a great team. I'm just saying exactly, their passing offense is really strong. It's the same with Ole Miss, too. Those are probably two of the teams I would be most scared of in the SEC this year. I've been thinking about it, too. I mean, going into Neyland Stadium, if Tennessee is, you know, like pretty close to that 500 line, maybe close to making a bowl game, have already made a bowl game, even have a winning record come that game, I think that stadium's going to be packed, and I think that's a bad spot for Georgia. So I've actually been thinking about that too. But I think Florida is still our biggest test of the year.
See, I'm the only thing I'm going to disagree with you on that statement is that Tennessee's horrible. Tennessee ain't horrible. They're good. I wouldn't say that they're like a team that you go into worried about week in and week out. Defensively, I think they've still got a lot of work to do, but that offense is for real. I mean, South Carolina's defense isn't what it was with Will Muschamp a few years ago. It's not even as good as it was last year. And I mean, last year, Ole Miss put up like 63 points on them, and that's what got Will Muschamp fired. So I would say that Tennessee is going to be Georgia's toughest offensive test. Florida offensively is not as good as Tennessee, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Florida is a better overall team. They have better athletes. They've got better talent. They've got a better defense than Tennessee. Tennessee's offense is more explosive than Florida's can be. Now, we've seen that game play out too, and I think that Georgia isn't going to have a problem with anybody, quite frankly. Georgia is going to handle Florida. Florida did not look great early on against Vandy. And I know it's, I mean, it, like, maybe they went in sleepwalking. You've made comments before, like, Dan Mullen likes his team to play down to competition. And that's so, so true. But it was still Vandy. And they ended up winning, like, 42-0. But, my God, they did not look very good there. And I don't think that even when they play Georgia, I don't think they're going to play up to Georgia. I think Georgia this year is what Alabama typically is. Coming from someone who has been on your side, though, I know how you feel where you're like, oh, you never know. You never know. You never know.
I never feel good about Georgia. I swear.
No, I mean, and you've also experienced the years
and
where
that's
it was
why.
Like, and I've been in the same position, like, not recently, but years ago, where it's like, oh, yeah, Georgia is not a team that you need to worry about this year with because they play with such intensity against Vanderbilt. That shows you where their mindset is. This team is focused on – they're sick of hearing the maybe next year from everybody else. They're sick of being the butt of that joke. They're sick of hearing about 1980. They're ready to start hearing about 2021. That's where Georgia is right now.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and jump into the mailbag. We have a couple questions for this episode. We got one from at Kenneth Carletta. His question is, where should Georgia Southern look for their new coach? Do you think we have the funds to pay Del McGee? What do y'all think?
Okay, so Witt and I were actually talking about this yesterday. I know one of Witt's favorites for the position is Del McGee. Now, I was just pulling up some information yesterday. So Chad Lunsford, who is the recently departed coach from Georgia Southern, his salary was around $680,000 per year. Del McGee currently is an assistant coach at Georgia, makes $800,000 a year. So in order for Georgia Southern to be able to afford Del McGee, you're going to have to give him, unless you can somehow play off nostalgia, you're going to have to give him a considerable salary, and I'm thinking that's at least $1 million and some job security. I don't know that they can afford that.
Exactly. I think Del McGee would be a good fit for it, but like you said, if I'm making $800,000 a year, I'm not going to go somewhere else and take a pay cut. And yeah, I know it's Georgia Southern nostalgia, but listen, I'm not going to go somewhere and take a pay cut. No, you're going to have to pay me more than what I'm making to really give me some job security. So, you know, I think Del McGee would be a good fit, but they're going to have to break out the old pocketbook.
No, I think they will break out the pocketbook, though, because if you look at what Georgia Southern and the donors want, they want somebody that's going to come in and add a spark and change the way things have been going recently. And look, Chad Lunsford was being promoted from being a special teams coordinator to being the head coach. It wasn't like he was getting paid because of his reputation. I think Willie Fritz was making a good bit more than that whenever he was the head coach. I don't think money is going to be the issue here. I think the issue for anything is going to be, is there going to be a bigger program out there that wants a guy like Del McGee because that is going to open the pockets. Del McGee would be my first person, but you know, per some people that I talked to that have some inside sources at Georgia Southern, they've reached out and at least inquired about Jeff Lebby, the offensive coordinator at Ole Miss. And I think that would be a great thing too. I've also heard that there's been some rumblings from within that Kendall Briles is the offensive coordinator at Arkansas. He is another potential candidate, and I would like either of those hires as well. The only reason that I think I like the Del McGee hire a little bit better than those is because he has ties to the program. If he gets it up and running, he's not gonna jump ship as easily, because he would feel like he would have a little bit more in the bucket than just, I'm at a G5 school that's winning and they love me here. Like Jeff Lebby, if he comes in, revolutionizes the offense and they win and go to a, you know, at least are relevant and are in the talks of a New Year's Six Bowl, he's going to take the first Power 5 job that comes open. Same with Kendall Briles. Whereas I think Del McGee has a little bit more loyalty to the program, and that's kind of what you want if you're Georgia Southern. And I don't think that they're going to have a problem paying $1 million, especially based off of the money that the donors are going to be putting forth, because this is what they want. This is the direction that they've decided to go with firing Chad Lunsford. You know that you're going to have to pay somebody and come out of pocket with it. So I think they will. I hope that Del McGee is one of those guys that they consider, and I would enjoy seeing that.
Well, Matt, to your point too, Del McGee has unreal connections around the state of Georgia when it comes to recruiting. Del McGee is probably the best recruiter on the University of Georgia staff besides Kirby Smart himself.
For sure, for sure. Isn't he the one that recruited Fields to Georgia?
Yes, yep. Del McGee, all of the biggest players that have come to Georgia have either been recruited by Del McGee or Sam Pittman before he left for Arkansas. Those are our two big guys. So Todd Monken's kind of been that guy now that Sam Pittman's gone, kind of helping him out. But to me, I think McGee's the guy. McGee is the guy you want to go for over anyone. But I did a little bit of research. I think if we don't change the offense, it's going to be Brian Bohannon. I didn't realize this, but he coached under Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech with that triple option system. And he runs the exact same thing that Georgia Southern runs. I really do not want that at Georgia Southern. He also coached with Paul Johnson at Georgia Southern too. I forgot about that. And he's 50-16 at KSU. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of it. I think that's probably where we're going to look to if we look to keep running that triple option. But if we don't, I could see us also going for a guy like Danny Britt, the head coach for Benedictine High School. He's won 2 state championships. He actually played football at Georgia Southern too. It's a guy that not a lot of people are talking about, but apparently he's kind of on the radar as well.
See, here's my problem with that, though. If they go with Brian Bohannon or a Danny Britt, what was the point of getting rid of Chad Lunsford? Like, because you're not doing anything to energize or progress your program.
Exactly.
If you want to make the argument that, oh, well, you know, we just needed a new voice, then hire Kevin Whitley, the interim head coach. Don't worry about – I mean, that to me would be just – keeping the program in the stagnant place of we enjoy being a
mediocre
middle tier group of 5 team that wins a big game every now and then and has App State's number, rather than becoming App State, who is playing on the national level consistently and has home and home games with Miami.
I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, and quite frankly, I'm tired of saying it. Georgia Southern recruits well enough to where if they change the offense, Georgia Southern would be a really, really stout football team. Offense has to change. Plain and simple. Next question.
This one's from @ChadS_529. His question is, are the Herminators the new Pac-12 favorite? Arizona State. What do y'all think?
I believe so, because Herm Edwards has those boys playing some football. And Oregon, I don't know what's been up with them as of late. They look all right, but they're just not what we thought they would be. And UCLA still has a lot of growing pains. I think Herm Edwards has the Sun Devils playing really good football. So, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I think that you have to put them in that conversation for being the favorite, which is crazy to me because of all the off-the-field stuff that's been going on around that program with all the infractions and stuff that are being investigated. You would most of the time when you see teams that are going through stuff like that, they are not playing very well. And for whatever reason, Herm Edwards has got those guys bought into his system, and I love to see it, man. I like some Sparky, so I am pulling as an unbiased journalist. I am actively pulling for Sparky to win the Pac-12.
Honestly, I think people are overreacting a little bit to Oregon losing to Stanford because that was the last time we saw Oregon play a football game. I think the only times they've looked bad this year is in that game that they lost in overtime. And the one touchdown win against Fresno State the first week of the season. They've looked great besides that. I'm not a big fan of Anthony Brown. I don't think he does enough for their offense for them to be a legit contender for a national title. But I think they are a runaway favorite for the Pac-12 right now. I know people are, you know, they're looking at Sparky. They're seeing them big win after big win every single week. They beat, I think it was Utah last week. They're playing really well, but I'm still going to stick with Oregon for now. And moving on to our next question, this one's from at Pokorny Aaron, and his question is, thoughts on Cincinnati?
Hey, I think Cincinnati's really good. They, you know, they could have played a little better on Friday, but you know what? Things happen. Cincinnati's good. I think they deserve to be where they are right now. They're what, the third spot in the AP poll? Yeah, I think that's a deserving spot for them right now. If they beat Notre Dame, you know, if they continue to win out and look really good, they have a good, great chance of making the playoffs. So, yeah, I think Cincinnati is a good football team.
I've been riding the Cincinnati train all off season. I've been riding the Cincinnati train into the season. They could the crazy thing is they could have played better on Friday, and they still won 52-3. I know Temple is abysmal, but that is the sign of a team that is in the top tier. Now, if you put them against Georgia, are they going to play? Are they going to be a favorite? No. If you put them against Alabama, they would probably be an underdog. But I'll say this. I don't think that the way that Alabama's played recently this year, they would want to see Cincinnati, because Cincinnati's defense is legit. I don't think that Alabama would have the problems with them if it was a neutral site game. But I mean, it would be one of those games I would go into with more caution than had I been told about it preseason. I'll say that for sure. Look, I hope Cincinnati wins out. I hope they blow the doors off of UCF this weekend, and I hope they go to the college football playoff, and then they're the first G5 team to get in the college football playoff. And of all the years that it could happen, I think this is the most likely, because the door's wide open for them.
Yeah, I'm cheering for Cincinnati to make the playoff. I would love to see them do it. I'm a big fan of their team, but I don't think it's going to happen this year. I was riding that train. I thought there was a good chance for it to happen. And then I saw Oklahoma and Ohio State play this weekend. Those are two good football teams. Those are two teams that can compete for national championships when they're playing at their best, like they did. Ohio State has the last 3 weeks. Oklahoma finally did in that second half of the Texas game. If they continue to look the way they did this weekend, I think both of those teams are going to make the playoff, even in the Big Ten with Ohio State. With everything that's going on over there, I think they're better than everybody else. Obviously, they looked good against Rutgers and Maryland, but still, I think they have the players, the talent, they're going to be really good. So I don't think there's going to be a spot for Cincinnati in the end. And moving on to our next question, this one's from at TB_Born. His question is, do you think Georgia deserves to be number one?
Honestly, I think this is a dumb question. Obviously, Georgia deserves to be number one. Who else in the country deserves to be number one? Who's this guy? TB_Born. I want you to write into us and tell us who you think should be number one over Georgia. Because this is a ridiculous question. Obviously, they should be number one in the country. Matt.
Yes, next question.
All right. I could see an argument maybe for...
What?
No,
don't even start.
I can't see it. I'm trying to help him out. No, Georgia's the number one team in the country right now. I'll be straight up about it. Obviously, there's a lot of football to be played, but I think Georgia has looked like the best team and has looked really good against some good teams as well. So, next question. This one's at Coach Kistler, and his question is, does Iowa stand a chance if they were to play Georgia? And what would the spread be?
No, Iowa doesn't stand a chance if they play Georgia. You want to know why? Because Iowa's offense falls right into the hands of what Georgia wants to do. They play like muddled up football. They play 1920s style football compared to what's being played nowadays, and Georgia would eat that alive defensively.
See, I think that game, like I think that game would be like a 5.5 point line. Like, I think Georgia would be like a 5.5 point favorite just because of the defense. Like, Iowa's defense is legit, and I feel like they would force Georgia into some errors. And the only way that Iowa's scoring is non-offensive touchdowns. And that would be their only hope. Iowa is not a team that I think can win at the elite level with what they have now, because they are last year's Georgia, or 2 years ago Georgia, where they've got this elite defense, but this not great offense.
Listen, if Georgia were to play Iowa this weekend, I think Georgia would be a 3-touchdown favorite in that game.
Easily.
Iowa, look, And I'm sorry, Mark, if you listen to this. I'm very sorry.
We love you,
Mark. Iowa would have gotten blown out in that Penn State game if Sean Clifford didn't get hurt. They were getting run out of the stadium. They could not, even the defense could not stop Sean Clifford. The only thing that was keeping them in the game were dumb turnovers from Penn State's side and Sean Clifford getting hurt at the end of the second half or in the middle of the second half. Once that backup quarterback came in, the entire game shifted. It was a great game. Iowa's a good team. I think Iowa is a top 10 team this year, for sure. Their defense is awesome. I think they have probably the second best defense in the country. They have the best secondary. Their secondary is unreal. The amount of interceptions they have against good quarterbacks is ridiculous. But I think Georgia, with the way that Iowa plays, they might have negative points on offense. They like Georgia would dominate Iowa's offense. Now, I think Iowa would do really well against Georgia's defense too, but nah, I think Georgia would beat the brakes off Iowa this season. And I'm not saying Georgia's that much better than everyone else. I'm just saying they're that much better than Iowa. Moving on to our next question. This is a good one for Lando. This one's from @Cody_McGee. Who starts at QB for Oklahoma next week?
When Lincoln Riley decided to put Caleb Williams in the game, Oklahoma's offense went from rags to If he goes back to Spencer Rattler on Saturday, our offense is going to go from to rags, okay? We need to start Caleb Williams, period.
I think a better question would be, where is Spencer Rattler going to be playing football next year? Because he's done. I mean, did you see the way he walked off the sidelines at the end of that game? Didn't even cheer with his team after having one of the greatest comebacks in Oklahoma-Texas history. He's finished, dude. I don't think he will, and I don't think he should take another snap for the University of Oklahoma.
When Caleb Williams threw that touchdown to Marvin Mims, the look on Spencer Rattler's face was priceless. Like he was shocked.
Honestly, at this point, as soon as Caleb Williams is named the starter, Spencer Rattler needs to transfer, because all he's going to do is be a locker room cancer. You could tell by his demeanor, and you hate to see this with a kid, because you know this kid's playing in the biggest game that the University of Oklahoma has, you know, every year outside of the Big 12 championship or the college football playoff, and he has one of his worst games. He gets benched. You look at guys like Jalen Hurts, who had that happen to him in the national championship, and yet he was the first person cheering on his backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Because it's all about team. It's all about win. And that right there is where Spencer Rattler lacks. He's not about team. He's about me. And you don't want that in your locker room. So as soon as Caleb Williams is named the starter, they need to go ahead and tell Spencer it's either hop on board, be a team guy, or go ahead, put yourself in the transfer portal and start figuring out where you're going to play next year.
Yeah.
Yep, completely agree. Completely agree. Go ahead and move on to our next question. This is our first question from a new listener. This is @Kyle_Flager. And his question is, how are y'all doing after watching such intense and crazy games from this weekend? Lando, how are you doing?
I am fully recovered, but man, Saturday was rough, man. Like I said, I went through so many different emotions and so many beers that I passed out at 10 o'clock. So I think this past weekend's slate of games was absolutely awesome. College football, it's just leaps and bounds better than the NFL. Like the NFL games on Sunday just couldn't compare it to what we witnessed on Saturday.
Yeah, totally agree. I love watching the NFL, but it's more of like I have no emotional attachment with the NFL like I do college football. So whenever, you know, starting the game, the day off at noon, the Texas-Oklahoma game was a blast. I didn't really go through any emotions there because, like, I really don't have a dog in the fight. Watching the Ole Miss-Arkansas game was, like, up and down. And, you know, obviously I was cheering for Ole Miss in that one. So it was like, that one was crazy. The failed two-point conversion to end the game with no time left. The fact that there was 1 second left on the clock was insane. You know, you go through all these emotions, then you hit that window. And honestly, the worst part about it for me as not a Georgia fan was I had to worry about the Braves in the playoffs at 5 o'clock on Saturday to lead me into the Alabama game, where I was at a homecoming dance chaperoning. and watching them play terrible for the first half. I get home and I watch them lose, and I went from this like really big high to this like painstaking low, and I just laid in bed wide awake until like 3 o'clock in the morning texting my cousin, who is also a massive Alabama fan and who was also hurt, and we just texted and all about the plays that didn't go right and the things that went wrong, and then I woke up Sunday morning and was like, all right, we've got London football. It was rough. I was mentally drained. I'm mentally exhausted. I was mentally beat down, and I was very sad. But on we press. That's why we love this stuff. It's like it's addicting, man.
I don't think I've ever had more emotions for football teams that weren't even teams I cheer for. I mean, during the Oklahoma-Texas game, like beginning of the game, I was like, oh my gosh, Texas looks awesome. Like, maybe Texas is actually back. Man, they look good. Steve Sarkisian might be proving me wrong. And then second half, I'm like, wow, Caleb Williams is in. I've been saying for a while, I thought he was going to be a really good quarterback. He's going off. He's beating up on Texas. Good for Oklahoma. I'm watching Arkansas Ole Miss. That game is unbelievable. Georgia Auburn, never really felt too worried about that game. But since it's a Georgia game, of course, I'm going to lose my crap every time I watch anything like that. And then the Alabama-Texas A&M game. I think I went through 8 or 9 beers just sitting there, like not knowing what to do with my hands while this game is going on. Like, I was just in shock of what was happening. So I have recovered. I mean, it's Tuesday at this point, but I think I slept pretty much all the way through Sunday until about maybe 30 laps or so into the NASCAR race. And I didn't even watch the NFL. I ended up watching the entire NASCAR race and I just went to sleep. But all right, guys, we're going to go ahead and end this episode off with our pour one out, cut them off. Lando, who are you pouring one out for?
This week, I am cutting off Whit Barfield because for the second year in a row, he has picked Texas over Oklahoma. And I don't understand why you keep doing it. Like, at this point, you just have to learn your lesson. I hope you know that Texas is 5-1. Oklahoma is 5-1 against Texas in the last several games we've played, so it would behoove you to stop picking against Oklahoma when we play Texas. So, Whit, I'm cutting you off. And I am pouring one out for Chris Fowler, who called his first ever Texas-Oklahoma game on Saturday, and he did a ridiculously masterful job. I mean, he was going absolutely berserk on each and every single touchdown pass, all the big plays in the game. He was doing all the hollering and yelling. I was getting excited, and it just made the game feel so exciting from at home. And you know, I wasn't able to actually be there in person, which one day I will actually get to go to the Texas State Fair and watch Oklahoma, Texas. But watching it at home was awesome because Chris Fowler made it really enjoyable to watch on TV. So good job, Chris Fowler.
F*** you. Sorry, Maddox.
All good. He heard more than that on Saturday night. So this week I'm actually pouring one out for us because I would say and this is like a humble brag for all of us, a big pat on the back. Our takes all year long have been extremely, extremely accurate. Now that I've said this, we're about to tank. But as far as our takes have gone, we've been talking about the Oklahoma quarterback situation for weeks, and now the national media is picking it up and starting to run with it. We've talked about a lot of things on this show that haven't been talked about, and we've been really, really accurate with a lot of the way that it's gone. So pouring one out for us this week because we deserve it. We're doing a great job. Whit, Lando, Keys, our takes are phenomenal. But this week, I'm cutting off Pete Golding, and I'm cutting Pete Golding off for one reason and one reason alone. When you go into a game and your offense, not including the blocked punt for a touchdown, your offense scores 31 points, you get an offensive touchdown, and you lose the game, that is a complete defensive nightmare, especially from an Alabama team. The roller coaster ride that we've been on with Pete Golding over the past 2 years, where it's like fire Pete Golding into the sun, and then, okay, maybe Pete Golding's actually not that bad, and then it goes right back into the pendulum of he's doing a terrible job. This game, in my opinion, had so much to do with defensive scheming. Yeah, Bill O'Brien didn't run the ball, but it had everything to do with the fact that when your team scores 38 points in the SEC and you're Alabama, you should win the game. There's no reason why you should lose that game. I'm putting a lot of the blame on Pete Golding because the defense all year long hasn't played with the physicality that we're used to seeing out of Alabama and finishing games. So that Pete Golding, you're on my crap list this week. Fix it because we're going to play the air raid, and if we get torched by Mississippi State and Mike Leach, I may just not ever be on this show ever again. I might jump off of a cliff. Wit.
Dang, guys. Linda cut me off and Matt threatened to jump off a cliff. It's getting pretty rowdy in here. I'm actually gonna bounce off of what Matt was just talking about. I'm gonna pour one out for Texas A&M head coach Jimbo Fisher, the first Saban assistant to break the streak. Saban was 24-0 going into Saturday against former assistants. He's gone up against some of the best, Kirby Smart, Lane Kiffin. He's beaten Jimbo a couple times. He's awesome. Nick Saban's done a great job. We all know he's the GOAT. But Jimbo Fisher was the first one to finally take him down. 24-1 now. And I'm also going to pour one out for Zach Calzada. Zach Calzada is a Georgia boy. He's from Lanier High School, but he actually played at Blessed Trinity for a little bit too. Couldn't get a starting job there. Transferred to Lanier. He's a good friend of a buddy of mine from back home. But he played a great game after getting a lot of hate from SEC and Texas A&M fans for his play the two games before that. So pour one out for him, man. He did a great job. Got a huge win, one of the biggest in A&M history. So pour one out for those two. And I'm also going to be cutting off Bo Nix for coming off the field Saturday against Georgia and blaming the loss on the refs. He lost 34-10. The loss wasn't on the refs. It was a 24-point difference. Maybe you would have gotten a couple points here and there, whatever. But I think it is a foolish, foolish, foolish move. It's a wimpy move to come off the field and in a press conference right away just start blaming the game on the refs. Oh, Georgia and Bama always get these calls. Auburn never gets these calls. We're just little old Auburn. Woe is me. I can't stand that. I think that is just wussy stuff. So Bo Nix, you're getting cut off. And I'm actually going to cut off Ed Orgeron as well, the dude has lost LSU. They're done. I think he's going to be fired by the end of this year. I think in an upcoming show, we're probably going to be talking about who's going to take over for LSU. He's lost the team. He is Gene Chizik 2.0, like we said he probably would be. Another take that we've talked about on this show. Pour one out for us.
Wow.
But yeah, Bo Nix and Edo, you guys are getting cut off. Keys, you pour one out for.
So let's just go ahead and keep cutting off coaches. Las Vegas Raiders coach John Gruden resigned so fast, yesterday, after alleged emails came to the surface of basically him taking out every demographic. Let's just be honest. He hit all the marks. Some people are saying he might still be coaching if he just kind of, played the apologetic game and just kind of
wasn't racist.
And wasn't a racist. He didn't even give them a chance. He went ahead and resigned on his own. He basically said, "You can't quit. You can't fire me. I quit." So cutting off John Gruden, and I'm pouring one out for. Let's just go ahead and give a big pat on the back for Week 6 of college football. That was a great week, and it might be the best overall week that we see. Hopefully, we're proven wrong though, so we get some more awesome weeks. But I would also like to pour one out for Georgia's defense. I know we've already mentioned it a couple times, but man, they're just killing it this year. Georgia has outscored opponents 239-33 as of now, and their defense has only allowed 2 touchdowns, which is absolutely unreal. All season, 2 touchdowns. So give it a good pat on the back for Georgia's defense.
Well, that's the show. Thank you guys for listening. As always, we appreciate it. Before you guys log off today, please don't forget to drop us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to our channel on Spotify, and give us a follow on our Instagram at Around the Keg and our Twitter at Around the Keg Pod. Send us any questions or topics you want us to discuss on the show, and we'll be happy to include as much as we can. Have a great week. See y'all.